I am so humble. More humble than you could ever know.
That was the sound of the mic drop.
The fact that we can make a joke of humility, that says a lot. For most of us, we recognize these words, I am so humble, as somehow self-defeating when we utter them. As soon as they are uttered, they appear to be untrue. You sure seem proud of your humility. As soon as we recognize our humility, poof, it up and vanishes in the winds of pride. Maybe it's the reflexivity of the virtue of humility that makes it so paradoxical, because it's a virtue related to self-regard. It's natural that things would get funny, kind of wonky, once you notice your own humility. Somehow your own humility becomes fodder for thinking yourself better than others. And I'm sure we could find a few references to self-defeating humility out there in politics.
What would you want your Secret Service code name to be? Mr. Trump?
Humble.
That's a good one.
I do have actually much more humility than a lot of people would think.
But really, I mean, can we make genuine, real personal humility a public goal? I mean, can we talk about it? You see, humility is a long-standing virtue. We all admire and praise and strive to be like humble people. St. Augustine is on record and has been quoted across the Christian tradition that almost the whole of Christian teaching is humility. Augustine even once instructed a student named Dioscorus, if you were to ask me, however often you might repeat the question, what are the instructions of the Christian religion? I would be disposed to answer, always and only, humility. St. Thomas Aquinas considers humility foundational and the beginning of virtue, precisely because it opens us up to the formative power of others, exemplars, to apprentice ourselves to them, apprenticeship especially to the Holy Spirit. Well, yes, humility is fraught, but most good things in life are. And if what great Christian theologians and church fathers have said is true, we need to talk more, do more, and be much more with respect to humility. As the beginning and perhaps the end of Christian character, on display most fully in the example of Jesus, humility is a central feature of what it means to become wise. I'm Evan Rosa, and you're listening to The Table Audio, a podcast about seeking Christian wisdom for life's biggest questions. Today, I'm excited to share a discussion of humility from an interview with Krista Tippett, the Peabody Award-winning journalist and loving force behind public radio's best show on spirituality, faith, and public life, On Being. She's also author of the 2016 New York Times bestselling book, Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. Maria Popova of Brain Pickings has noted Tippett's skill in, quote, touching on every significant aspect of human life with great gentleness and a firm grasp of human goodness, end quote. I agree. From my own car rides home, and then before, during, and after dinner discussion around the Rosa family table, On Being is a consistent go-to source of nuanced and generative ideas. We covered lots of ground in this interview, but for this episode, I'm sharing Krista's thoughts on humility, mystery, self-knowledge, and why we, as Reinhold Niebuhr once noted, are our own most vexing problem. I love reading book dedications and epigrams, so I started by asking her about her books. And it turned out to be a great launch point for a conversation about humility.
You dedicate Becoming Wise to Allie and Sebastian. Those are your children, right?
Yes, that's right.
And you identify them, I love this, as beloved teachers.
Yeah.
And I'm moved by this when I think of my own kids. I've got three kids. And they're young. They're 6 through 1. So to think of them as my beloved teachers is good. It's stark and it's surprising of learning from children, but it's also kind of puts us in this place of humility.
Yes.
So, and the clear-sightedness of children, the way they see the world. why did you dedicate this book to them, and what does it mean to have your children as beloved teachers?
Yeah, well, I mean, I do have all kinds of lofty thoughts about that because I've been doing this project in the years that my children were growing up, and I remember even interviewing Robert Coles years ago, right, about the spiritual life of children and people who, their children are, children do ask the great big theological questions, right? I mean, they ask the questions that stump us and that are
usually too close to bedtime.
That's right, too close to bedtime. where do we come from, and why did grandma die, and why are people bad to each other? And these are really important questions. It's the beginning of moral life and spiritual life. But also, I think in a more kind of just down to earth way, children, they anchor us to reality. My children, even in terms of leading a life where I had something of a public life. It's, I'm not a big celebrity, but there are circles in which, which I'm a public person and recognized. And, my children always kind of reminding me what was important and real. And, I still remember a couple of moments when I was first had the radio show and somebody said to my daughter, wow, it must be really exciting to hear your mother's voice coming out of the radio. And she said, no, not really. We hear her voice all the time at home.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes.
Or my son, somebody saying to my son, your mother, she has a radio show, she writes books. And he said, and let's not forget her most important job, being a mom. So I just feel like my children were always there to keep me grounded and have done that in the most wonderful way. And, a new life in the world, which is what a child is, it's I mean, if we're asking spiritual questions, if we're thinking theologically, we are watching this unfold, and it's full of learning.
Starting with children as beloved teachers is important context for discussing humility, I think. As we grow older, it's possible that we'll genuinely come to know more about the world. But what's certain is that we'll definitely think we know more. Childhood wonder introduces a realism about the nature of human life and questioning. This is perhaps why George Steiner suggested that rather than Homo sapiens, that is, animals that know, or more accurately, quote, Homo querens, the animal that asks and asks.
Why? Why and what? Why, Daddy? How? Why?
If you didn't get that reference, inside joke, check out our first episode on seeking Christian wisdom on life's big questions. The Southern Gothic novelist Flannery O'Connor once wrote that mystery is a great embarrassment to the modern mind. Children disarm us and invite us to humble ourselves before the great mountains of mystery in life's big questions. In her section on faith in Becoming Wise, Krista writes, quote, "Once upon a time, I took in mystery as a sensation best left unexamined. Now I experience it as a welcome. I'm strangely comforted when I hear from scientists that human beings are the most complex creatures we know of in the universe, still by far. Black holes are in their way explicable. The simplest living being is not. I lean a bit more confidently into the experience that life is so endlessly perplexing." I love that word. Spiritual life is a way of dwelling with perplexity, taking it seriously, searching for its purpose as well as its perils, its beauty as well as its ravages. In this sense, spiritual life is a reasonable, reality-based pursuit. It can have mystical entry points and destinations, to be sure, but it is in the end about befriending reality, the common human experience of mystery included. End quote. Why is this a starting point for humility? Because humility, however you want to define it, and we will get to that someday, the goal of finding a philosophically and psychologically satisfying definition of humility. But humility is about being truly and rightly acquainted with yourself, neither over nor underestimating, neither over nor under concerned about yourself. Krista's words are again helpful here. Quote, humility is woven through lives of wisdom and resilience. It's another word that has acquired a taint of ineffectuality, but my life of conversation has reintroduced it to me as a companion to curiosity and delight. Spiritual humility is not about getting small, not about debasing oneself, but about approaching everything and everyone else with a readiness to see goodness and to be surprised. This is the humility of a child, which Jesus lauded. It's the humility of the scientist and the mystic. It has a lightness of step, not a heaviness of heart.
The negative connotation that humility has gotten that I think I grew up with was that it's about demeaning yourself, right? Or dismissing yourself, or even worse, kind of making yourself vulnerable to, you know, to being ineffectual or being abused. But you're right. It's not about making yourself small. It's about enjoying and taking in the vastness of and the beauty and dignity of others, and of reality.
Didn't C.S. Lewis say humility does away with modesty?
I love that. Yeah,
something like that. It's about reality. So, what's fascinating to me about humility is, one, I mean, there's huge resurgence in contemporary research about intellectual humility, moral humility, spiritual humility. And we find it in the sciences, and we find it in spirituality.
Yeah.
And finally, some common ground. Not finally, really, but something we can agree about. Okay, well, here's a quote from the book. Mystery lands in us as a humbling fullness of reality. We cannot sum up or pin down. Such moments change us from the inside if we let them.
Yeah.
There's a real movement to humility if we allow it to take its fullness in us. And so I wonder if you'd just comment on how you see humility operating in the various contexts of life.
You know, we were talking earlier about our children being our teachers, and I happened to be studying divinity. I was at divinity school when my daughter was born, when I got pregnant and she was born, and that had not been, you know, in the plan. so there's like one of those moments where you think, maybe we're not in charge of all of this after all. I was reading these, you know, these passages like, you know, be humble like a little child, which had always just completely left me cold. And, you know, these were the kinds of passages you skim over and you say, well, at some time and place and that made sense, but it doesn't make sense. But then I find myself studying these passages and living with a little child. And what I saw in my daughter was this humility that is about walking out into the world every day, and everything is new and everything is potentially amazing, right? It was a stance. It was a willingness to be amazed and surprised and taught by, you know, the person walking by, the crack in the sidewalk, the bird in the air. And so, you know, that those passages, then I started to see there's just this incredible wisdom and reality in them that I had never considered. And that was kind of my beginning of thinking about humility. And yes, the connection between humility and mystery is huge. And this language that I learned from a geneticist, actually, that, you know, about the spiritual life of a mystic and a scientist has this kindred quality of that includes humility. On the one hand, a passionate commitment to discerning truth however best you can at any given moment and living by truth, and at the same time living in a kind of wonder and humility that, you know, there are things you do not, cannot, will not understand in this lifetime. That there's also everything yet to discover.
More from Krista in just a minute. After the break, we'll talk about humility and self-knowledge and humanity's most vexing problem. Besides podcasts, articles, videos, not to mention a residential research fellowship program for scholars and pastors, we at the Biola University Center for Christian Thought put on events, and one is coming up, the Table Conference. We treat a different theme every time, and on September 21st and 22nd, 2017, we'll be bringing in theologians, philosophers, psychologists, and others to discuss resilience, growing stronger through struggle. Here's Center for Christian Thought program administrator and event planner extraordinaire, Laura Pelser. Laura.
Hi, Evan.
What's your favorite thing about the Table Conference?
My favorite thing about the Table Conference is that our audience is genuinely hungry to learn about these things, and they're honestly coming with these big questions, and they're excited and enthusiastic to hear from who we have.
And who do we have? Well, I'll name two for now. Philosopher Eleanor Stump is professor of philosophy at St. Louis University and author of Wandering in Darkness: Narrative and the Problem of Suffering. She'll be joined by Miroslav Volf of Yale University, who's the author of Exclusion and Embrace: A Theological Exploration of Identity, Otherness, and Reconciliation. We'll be sharing more names in the near future, and you can also check out the event on our website at cct.biola.edu. Now back to our interview. One of my favorite books ever is Walker Percy's Lost in the Cosmos. Shout out to Greg Gansel for the recommendation. It deals with humanity's zany, yet focused, even obsessive quest to know ourselves. The book's epigram is taken from Nietzsche's Genealogy of Morals. And I can't ever seem to get this passage out of my head. We are unknown, we knowers, to ourselves. Of necessity, we remain strangers to ourselves. We understand ourselves not. For each of us holds good to all eternity, the motto. Each is the farthest away from himself. As far as ourselves are concerned, we are not knowers. So I asked Krista her thoughts about the connection between humility and the vexing problem of self-knowledge.
There's also this connection to self-knowledge, and it comes up on a few points throughout your book. Humility and self-knowledge, the idea of if humility, like the truly humble position, is to see things rightly and to be connected to reality, not estimating yourself higher, not estimating yourself lower.
Yeah.
You think of Socrates, where wisdom is knowing that he doesn't know.
right.
And looking back to some other voices here, you say, you've said this a few times, and I learned to love this quote, Reinhold Niebuhr, man is his own most vexing problem.
Yeah.
And this is just, it's almost on repeat. There's this chorus of thinkers and influential people who are reminding us of this. What is this? Why are we so vexing to ourselves? What are we to make of this, and kind of accepting it and putting it to use and enjoying it, delighting in it?
Yeah, it is the human condition. But I think about that the idea that man is his own most vexing problem, and these are the best diagnoses we could give of our current economic present, our racial present, our political present.
Yes.
It's just a great mystery of life and of reality, that we are so complicated and so complicated even to ourselves, but it is what we have to work with. And what is redemptive, in a hard way, is that, when we let ourselves just be attentive and searching about this, that is where we grow. That is where we have the possibility of growing wiser and not just older and not just smarter. But it's hard work.
One thing I notice is if it's a problem for me, it's a problem for everyone. And again, it puts us on equal footing to to be accepting of one another.
Yes, and that I think that you just got to an important part of this, and this is actually something we have to learn. I mean, the love and self-knowledge, actually, neither of these things are we meant to carry by ourselves as individuals, you know, nor will we get them right. And we have this culture where we're all taught to kind of be self-made and, you know, raise yourself up by your bootstraps, and somehow you're supposed to know it all. And, you know, I also wrote in the book about, you know, the end of my marriage and this realization that, you know, even that kind of love, I think, is meant to be held in community. We need to accompany each other in this work of loving and knowing and becoming. And because even that self-knowledge, even that understanding the line between what we know and what we don't know, I mean, you know, that's something you get with maturity, and we actually need feedback. This is not all stuff we should do in isolation, you know, alone in our room. It's stuff we can't actually do at its fullest alone in our room.
That's all for now, friends, but not for long. We'll pick up right there in the coming week when we'll post another portion of this interview with Krista Tippett of On Being. We'll be discussing the social nature of humility as opposed to just the personal. As she said, the need to accompany each other in this work of loving and knowing and becoming. We'll also talk about Krista's favorite question to ask her interviewees and politics. Humble politics. Is it even possible? Whereas the general theme of this episode was on humility and the self, next time we'll talk more about humility and the other, and I can't wait to share it with you others. Table Audio is hosted by me, Evan Rosa, and is produced by the Biola University Center for Christian Thought, which is supported by generous grants from the John Templeton Foundation, Templeton Religion Trust, and the Blankenmeyer Foundation, as well as people like you who care about seeking Christian wisdom for life's big questions. Theme music is by The Brilliance. Special thanks to Krista Tippett, Lily Percy, and Chris Hegel over at On Being for their generosity, time, help with audio production, and just for, well, being. To subscribe to The Table Audio, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found. Just search The Table Audio. And really, it will help us if you leave us a review in Apple Podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at EvanSubRosa, and you can follow the Center for Christian Thought at BiolaCCT, or visit cct.biola.edu.
There's more humility than you would think. Believe me.